Here we are waiting for the white bus to unload. Grandpa is supposedly on the white bus.
They've got young cadets helping the veterans off the bus. It's really sweet. There he is. He's got his suspenders on. Excellent.
You got family members on the bus? Cool.
I'm doing fine.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Hey, Grandpa.
Hi, good to see you.
How are you?
Welcome to DC.
I got to hit this.
Yeah, me too.
This way.
We're right here. You okay?
Oh, yeah. It's just...
How was the flight? Shit.
Oh, flight was, good, but a lot of waiting, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Confusion.
Yeah.
You know. But the biggest... That plane is the biggest one I've ever been on.
The biggest airplane?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Big one.
Yeah. Well, let's go back over to the memorial.
Let's go show you the memorial.
It's really pretty. Now, you haven't been to Washington since the 60s, right?
64, I think, is when we were here.
Wow. It's changed a lot.
Quite a bit, I guess. Of course, I was doing the driving then, and I'm doing the driving now, so it's a big difference.
Yeah, driving around is not easy in this place.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, newest helicopter, I think. I think I saw Marine One earlier, but I wasn't sure.
Oh. How's things going? Good?
Yeah.
Bad?
Yeah. Are you okay?
I'm good.
You know, same old stuff.
Hey, it's got a little chilly. I'm glad I brought a jacket.
Yeah, I know. I kind of wish I had. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm young. I'll take it. So the flight was okay. Was there much turbulence?
Oh, no.
Oh, good. Matt's got a recording device, so he's recording us right now.
So if you feel like telling the story,
hold back. Now, did you see any of your old buddies in the plane? Or
Not really, no. Just talked to a bunch of people, but not really anybody that I knew. You ran into last night, before I went over to my room, a fella that I worked with, but he's on tomorrow's flight.
Oh, okay.
But they were in last night. He's run out to Sydney.
Oh. Yeah, that's way out there.
Yeah.
Sydney's far away. It's in western Nebraska.
Omaha to Grand Island at 135, 37 miles, something like that. Grand Island to North Platte's the same. North Platte to Sydney's the same. Sydney to Cheyenne's the same.
Oh. See,
that's because they're railroad towns.
Yeah.
And they built that because... 135 miles was a day's work for the crew. You could take it out there, get a crew, new crew, take next to 35 miles.
Isn't that interesting?
That's why those towns are where they're at.
Huh.
Yeah. Whoo!
You want to sit down for a minute?
No, I just...
Yeah, I know.
We're almost there.
I keep telling everybody that the male nurse in St. Francis used to tell me. I'm going to run into him. Jim, don't get old. It's bad for your health.
That's true, I guess. Grandpa, I want you to tell Matt the story about this cane. Because I think you told me a while ago.
Yeah, this is a
nice looking cane.
It's Betty's stepmother's uncle. Probably, I think back in the Civil War days.
That is nice.
Eagle.
Wow.
Looks like
look
a snake.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does look like a snake.
It is an eagle.
That's a nice looking cane. It's
carved
all carved.
During the Civil War?
Probably, yeah, about that. I think there's somewhere around here. I think that's all I want to. It's war so much. There's writing. I don't know if there's a date or not in there some days.
Wow. It's beautiful,
isn't
it?
It is a beautiful cane, yeah.
We'll go slow. We've got plenty of time here. We'll go slow.
What squadron were you in the war?
I was in the Navy. A destroyer.
USS Daly.
519.
Daly. 519. DD 519.
2,100 ton destroyer. We had five inch 38 caliber main battery ground gun, and two sets of torpedo tubes. We had five torpedoes each tube after each set. So it was 10 torpedoes.
Did you guys fire the torpedoes?
Yeah, in Saratoga Straits.
What was that like, being on board the ship and firing the torpedo? Did the ship move when the torpedoes fired?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were rather busy in the mountain because we were keeping distracted, we'll say, with our 5-inch or our main battery, and I was of course on Mount One, and that's where we were going. So we were doing the most of the firing, and then it has four barrels, 40 millimeters, and two barrel 40 millimeter anti-aircraft. And wow. I think we had about eight or 10 20 millimeters.
And what was your job?
I was gunner's mate, first class. Gunner's mate, just took care of the guns. And my battle station was number one mount. And in battle stations, the gunner's mate is actually the fifth man. If anything goes wrong with the gun, you're there to repair it.
Right.
Or if you have somebody that happens, what you'd fill into their spot. And that's what happened the day we got hit.
So you wouldn't actually fire. You would just make sure the guns were in great shape.
Yeah. Well,
and if a gun needed fixing, you would fix the gun.
Right then, yeah.
But you filled in. You actually,
yes.
You started firing when, you said, when you were hit.
Well, before we went out on Iwo Jima, we were out on what they called radar picket. They tend to a destroyer that has radar and anti-aircraft gunners and a couple of small boats with them out on all around the island there, and they call them radar pickets to pick up any planes coming in. Well, I don't know, first three or four times we were out, it was always some other place that was getting hit. We were lucky. We thought we were doing, you know, one of those deals. But that about the fifth time, they picked up 40 of them coming in. We had three Marine pilots with Corsairs on, which was the fastest thing they had out at that time, because they didn't have any jets out there in that area yet. By the time, and we sent them out to intercept those 40, by the time that they got within range, where they had to call themselves off because they were in our range, there was only 10 enemy planes. They hit 40 of them, took 40 out of commission, or 30 out of commission, because the Jap pilots were
kamikaze pilots. Oh, they were just crashing into the planes?
They knew how is to take off. They didn't engage in any deal. We had talked to the pilot afterwards, a Marine pilot, and he came aboard, and he says, the only reason there was 10 to get through, he says, we just couldn't turn up and down fast enough to get them. So they were, you know, couldn't they just flew straight through? He said, we'd make a pass up, get them, pass down, get them.
I always thought a kamikaze pilot was a pilot who, when he saw no other way out, he took himself out by crashing into something he could destroy. But you're saying that they actually trained pilots to be nothing else but kamikaze pilots?
That's right.
I had no idea. I thought it was the last resort.
They even had their funeral held before they left. Their funeral was held before they left.
So you took off.
No, that's it.
They knew that they were going to,
die. Yeah, yeah. That was towards the end of the war. Their funeral was held and everything was ready to go.
I'm completely shocked, Grandpa. I had no idea. I had no idea that's what the Japanese did.
And it anything to go. Well, the one that got hit us. Well, it didn't actually hit us, but that's because our skipper was pretty shrewd. He was coming along, it was like this way. And he was coming at us like this. So he figured I'd taken us right behind, right in this deck to take out the bridge and everything there. And then the whole ship would be gone. First, I had a buddy up on the quartermaster up on the bridge. And he says, I thought the old man had froze. So he was just standing there watching, staring, staring, and staring. He says, all of a sudden he hollered, hard right rudder. And they pulled, and he went right between the stacks. And when he hit the water, he floated. Shrapnel fell up there. There was three of them that was killed. We had about 30 of them wounded, you know, but three of them was killed. And one of the three was a doctor.
The only doctor on board the ship.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, well, he was basically his own fault. He wasn't supposed to be where he was up there. He was up, he wouldn't see the action. He should have been down in sick bay there ready for
the deal. Served him right.
Yeah. But he was...
Kelly.
Yeah.
But, wow, yeah, what a great story that is.
And it...
So this was close to Iwo Jima?
It was either Jima or Okinawa. I don't think I know which war it was, but we were out there. And at that time, just before we pulled out on that, right, the pointer, what they call the pointer, you got a man sitting there that this is the pointer, up and down. He also was holds the trigger. And then the trainer is the one that goes this way. The pointer, they took him off the ship with an emergency appendicitis. Didn't have anybody to fill in. So as the fifth man, I was on the pointer. All right. Now, the batteries, the main batteries, they're all under the direction of the main battery director up on high. They got the scope and the radar and everything. They're trained out there. And you match up pointers, throw an automatic, and put the trigger. They have complete control over your gun. Okay, but now... This is a one mount one, mount two, the bridge. So you don't want these mount one and two firing it this way.
Right. So far.
So you got stops.
Yeah.
Up here,
right.
It's automatically. Mm-hmm. But the crosshairs and the finders that you're walking through is right on there because it's following. It doesn't have to have any stops. So I'm looking here through the deal there, and it looks like he's coming. I'm looking up there and watching him.
It looks like
he's
coming right
in the cross, right in my lap.
Oh.
He's really not.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, he is. So
wow. You thought that was it?
Yeah, but I thought it was. I thought we were going to get hit, but I wasn't. I didn't think I was going to get killed. I don't. I think back at that moment. I said, "Why didn't I? How stupid can you be? You know, this thing going to hit you. That big explosion. What else is going to do?" But I wasn't, that wasn't my train of thought.
Yeah.
I was, so.
Well, I'm real glad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it sure is.
Look up.
Yeah. The Laurel way up there.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty neat. Here, let's go up here. We can take all our pictures up in here.
Okay.
Down to the fountain. Oh, you mean on the overlook?
Yeah, with the fountain in the background. Yeah. All right. Grandpa, you get up in there.
Pardon?
May I take a picture?
Oh. You will?
With on your camera, or do you want to do it on his?
Oh, you're going? Yeah, sure. Okay.
Go ahead.
It's my grandpa. He fought in the Pacific.
Oh, yeah?
Thank you, fellas.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Look at you, Grandpa.
Oh,
yeah. Go back over there.
Do you want to go down and there's a fountain and there's stars over there. See, it's really pretty. Let's go down this way.
What was the date that you enlisted?
It'd be May, I forget now exactly, 18th of 42.
And you said, you told me once that you were underage.
Oh, 17 and a half,
you're
yeah.
17 and a half? Oh,
yeah.
All right, so
yeah,
you fudged it a little bit.
Mother had a, well, folks had a sign for me, of course. Is,
oh, okay.
What they went in on what they called a kids' cruise. If you're less than 18, you sign up to be in till the day before your 21st birthday.
Oh.
Regular Navy.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I was in. But, way, they wouldn't let my mother sign for me.
No?
See, my dad, no. My dad was, hi.
Hello.
He had been recalled in April. He stayed in the reserve from World War One, and he'd gotten recalled in April, and so he wasn't there. He was back around New York someplace. So got all the papers, shipped them to him there. Before they got there, the Army had sent him down to Walter Reed Hospital for a physical, so they transferred the papers down there. Before they got there, he was back back there. So it was a couple of weeks before they finally caught up with him. They got back to me. Then I went in, which may or may not have been a break, because they it was 120 in a boot camp up in Great Lakes, and it was all Nebraska.
Your boot camp was up in Great Lakes.
Great Lakes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't know that.
I kind of think of boot camp as being in the South. I don't think of it as being up in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, well, there's boot camp there, and there's another one out in.
My dad went to Mississippi for his boot camp.
My dad?
He was in the Air Force.
But, and then, they all of them were gathered in Nebraska for that. Normally, a boot camp would be all over. So they get about 120, and then they make one company. But this whole company was Nebraska. We recruited in Omaha. They had a pro or semi-pro team play come in, and they had a big ball game. Then they brought us all out in the field and swore us in on the out on the baseball field. Then all together in a train up to the Great Lakes, got off and went into they started a new camp, Mumford, and we were the first one in the barracks. So our boot camp training was only 6 weeks, was just cleaning that barracks up, because you know after constructed, had to get all the extra plaster off the floors and the windows all cleaned up and all that stuff.
Did you find boot camp hard?
No, that's what I say. It wasn't. No,
it was. You got a pretty easy boot camp because all you had to do was clean up the mess that was there.
Well, yeah, but another thing is that the chief was one of these ball players or something that they brought him in, and they called him 30-day wonders. That wasn't an officer, but he was a chief. And he would make sure that he wanted to stay there, so he was up at the headquarters all the time instead of, you know, keeping us. So we were pretty much on our own.
I guess you got a break then.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty good break.
And
about
the only marching we ever did, where we'd have to get together and march. They'd march us down to get our shots. And then a couple of times they went out for, they had a, who was he? It was a banjo player there, put on a little part, deal for us one night.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell.
After, boot camp, at that time, anybody that knew which end of the pliers was the jaws and which end of the screwdriver was the handle was a mechanical genius, so he was sent to a school.
Uh-huh.
And in peacetime, all ordnance ratings, it was just froze. There was just no more. There weren't any. But of course, as soon as the war, they needed them like mad, and they didn't have them, so as many as they could possibly, they shoved them into ordnance school, and gunner's mate was on ordnance. Well, it was gunner's mate, torpedoman, fire controlman, that's all ordnance. And my mind's, but where was I going with that?
Training, I guess.
I was just out of high school, and I went to gunner's mate school
in the Great Lakes.
Great Lakes training, which was they didn't have any guns actually to work on, so it was basically you study out of a book, take tests.
Oh.
I was just out of high school. It was simple for me.
Yeah.
Most of them in that class, they'd been out a few years,
So I ended up in the top part of the deal.
Right.
The top third of the class.
You tested well.
Went on to advanced schooling in San Diego in electric hydraulics. And everybody that graduated out of that.
They shipped you out from San Diego?
No. I was rated then. A third class.
Oh, okay.
I was third class petty officer, which would be the same as a sergeant in the Navy. And so I went aboard ship rated, which means you got to way ahead of everybody else because you don't have to work your way up.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
And the ships were, it was a brand new ship we put in commission. So I'm what they call a plank owner. Was what puts in the commission of your plank owner of that ship. It was and the same one all the way through. And they had just a skeleton of petty officers. So when your time was up that could be advanced, you take a test and you're just automatically. So I was bing, 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 first class. If the award lasted and he leaked the time for a couple more months or something, I'd have probably been a chief petty officer. Yeah, you know, it was just that way.
Wow.
So that's what I mean, I got breaks.
Yeah.
Now, after the war ended, did you remain in the service or were you discharged?
No, I came home. So,
on your own or did
no.
they just...
Well...
You asked to be discharged?
If you're under age, 17 and a half, under 18 years old, you're on a minority. You're in service or regular Navy till the day before your 21st birthday. So that's what I was... The war ended in August, was it? I think it was August, something like that. I was 21 the 20th of November, which means that I was, and we were coming back, and we hit the States in the first part of December.
That was it?
And it was up to me. I could have signed over.
Why didn't you, do you think? What were you feeling at the time?
I'd been home one time.
You wanted to see your family.
Yeah, you know.
You kind of over the whole Navy thing at that point?
No, it was good.
I mean, it's a career.
Oh, yeah, it was very good, and I should have, but... when we left the islands down there, the ship was scheduled to go to Navy Yards in New York, or Brooklyn Navy Yard in there, for decommissioning. Well, I was intended to stay at a board there, which would go through the canal and come on up. I know if I'd done that, going through the canal and hit San Diego, I would have probably undoubtedly had a few... too many and signed up for another 6-year hitch.
That
went. But before we left Pearl Harbor, they had changed it and we had to go to Norfolk.
You started heading towards the buses.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to go down to the water and see anything that's down here?
No, that's fine.
You're all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
This is your memorial, Grandpa.
Yep.
This is quite a deal.
So, you after you were discharged and you went home and you saw your family, you stayed in electronics, right? I mean, you continued to do... What was the first job you had outside the Navy after the war?
It was what they called picking parts for General Motors and filling orders.
This was in Nebraska?
Yeah.
There was a General Motors plant in Nebraska?
No, a warehouse.
Just a warehouse.
Yeah. And
you were going through the parts to pick the best ones, or you were
filling orders. They're filling orders.
So it was like distribution.
Yeah, and then the so-called boss, he was kind of
cutting the grass.
Yeah, it was kind of a chintzy deal there
at General Motors.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to leave the. Premises went during break or anything, but it was hot and everything. And it was just a little restaurant on the way, a little ways up. Well, we'd always go up there anyway.
And always breaking the rules.
Two or three of us went up there, and he picked out one of the guys that was figured out making that his career, I guess, and didn't say a word to us. But he chewed his guy out. Ticked me and the other guy off. So we decided to stick it.
How long were you with the GM?
Oh, that was only about 6 months, something like that.
And what was the first big job you had?
Western Electric installer.
It was Western Electric. What were you installing?
For telephone equipment. And the first job was a manual office in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Putting in another section of switchboard for him was manual.
No, stop.
It says Pacific right above there.
Oh, so that's great.
That's going to be nice.
Thank you.
Can you take, I'm sorry, can you
sure.
take, can you grab this? Grandpa.
Here we go. Okay.
Thanks.
You want to turn that off?
Yeah.
See, what is it?
So Manny wants to talk to you about tubes.
Huh?
You want to talk to him about tubes?
Yeah. So when you were working at Western Electric, did you have anything to do with vacuum tubes?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you ever see the manufacturing of vacuum tubes?
No. No? Uh-uh. No, just because we used tubes in the...
In the telephone circuits,
in the,
right?
Yeah, in the carriers. But, most of the deals were open wire. And you take a 1 to 4, that'd be 2, 1 and 2, 3 and 4. That's a... One telephone circuit on this one, one circuit on this one. Then you take a lead off the center point of the deal, and this one the center point here, and you got a phantom circuit.
Oh, all right.
Right.
Phantom
so,
power?
So now you got, now you can have on four, on two telephone lines, you can have four or three circuits.
Right.
Okay. Now then they put up a filter or transformer in the filter. They can put a radio carrier on it, so that you got a radio frequency that modulates voice up to that frequency that's out of range, what's on there. And then at the other end, they bleed it off and you back it down to audio, video. So you can have the C carrier would have, I think, six more. So you could have nine phone circuits on one. And then you progressed on from that. All of those younger ones like that, they were all vacuum tubes. But then they, later on, they went
transistors.
Into transistors, yeah.
And now, how long were you with Western Electric?
About 3.5 years. Because then I got recalled for Korea. And when I got back out...
I didn't realize you were recalled for Korea.
Yeah, I stayed in the reserves. I got recalled there. And while I was in, I moved back to Burlington, and she was set up there with Betty and the girls were set up in Burlington. When I come back, well, I'd worked as Western Electric. I'd worked in Burlington, so they knew me. And they were needing an equipment maintenance man because the equipment maintenance man wanted to transfer to Fullerton, and they would release him, all right, as soon as they got somebody to take his place. So they wouldn't... They wouldn't hire me off right off because of the fact that there was kind of a, they called it a gentleman's agreement. They wouldn't hire, Western Electric wouldn't hire telephone men or AT&T, and then vice versa, you know, like stealing away from them. So
right.
Basically, technically, I had to quit Western Electric, wait 3 months. Yeah, wait 3 months, and then they would hire me. That's
AT&T
what
would hire you.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I then went.
How long were you in Korea for? Did you actually ship out to Korea?
No, I never got there.
You never got there?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because the war ended or they just didn't need you?
Well, they didn't need me apparently because I said I'd been in the Pacific all the time there, so they had a deal. I said, well, yeah, I'll take the East Coast. And they gave me East Coast, but Norfolk, Virginia. I figured maybe I'd get over Europe. But no.
No.
So,
and when did you leave the reserves?
Let's see. We got out in 45, in December of 45, and in January of 46, we started an active reserve duty. Then I went to
Western Electric, and it's on the road, so I went to inactive reserve. So I ended that 4 years, another 4 years, and in that period of time is when I got recalled. So
for Korea.
Yeah. So then when that 4 years was up, which would give me, they wanted to know if I wanted
to. So you were active duty for 4 years in about 1950 or so? 49, 50?
No.
You were back in the actual, because they reactivated you for Korea. Now, you didn't end up going to Korea.
No.
But you were, you were active in Norfolk, Virginia. You were active duty at that point.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So you were in for another 4 years.
I think about 18 months.
Okay. And then at the end of 18 months, you didn't end up going into Korea or anything that. They deactivated you and you became a reservist again, correct?
Yeah, up until the rest of the 4 years was up. That was another about 2.5 years.
Okay, so when the second 4 years was up, that was it? You were out of the military altogether, or did you remain in the reserves for longer?
No. They just didn't want to send me a ticket or a letter that said, did I want to sign up for another 4 years? And I filed it.
And that was it.
That was
your military career was over.
Yep.
Well, thank you for serving
our
country.
Your camera.
Oh.